Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots to talk about this weekend. We'd love you to join us. 888-302-3684 gets you an appointment in the doctor's office. You can pose your questions about medicine and nutrition. We'd love to hear from you. 888-302-3684. And I want to mention at the top of this program that this weekend program is but the tip of the iceberg of the intelligent medicine phenomenon, because we've got great podcasts. This week we put up an interview with America's foremost eye health expert, integrative ophthalmologist, Dr. Robert Abel. And we also talked about one of the reasons why people just can't get well when they get treated with powerful antibiotics. People who suffer from sinusitis, men who suffer from prostatitis. There are biofilms that protect the bacteria, that allow the bacteria to do their work unmolested by our own immune system or by outside powerful agents like antibiotics. But there are ways to disrupt and break down the biofilms. And this is actually one of the cutting-edge techniques that we're doing in the field of complementary and alternative medicine. So check out our podcast at drhoffman.com. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Facebook, because we got lots to say about natural medicine. 888-302-3684 is our number. And, you know, a big theme this fall is going to be get the flu shot. And, of course, every year there's a big effort to have everyone get the flu shot. But this year in particular, drafting on the fears of widespread Ebola outbreaks, there's going to be a big push for every single person to get the flu vaccine. Why? Because, well, if a lot of people are coming in with fevers, feeling sick, body aches, so these are symptoms that essentially mimic the early stages of Ebola. And so the rationale is let's keep the American populace healthy. Let's not tie up our healthcare system with lots of people who we suspect might be coming down with some dread African disease. And we're going to make sure that everyone gets vaccinated. And it's actually came up with me in kind of a family circumstance, because we're all invited up to Thanksgiving. And we traditionally go up to somebody's house, one of our relatives. And unfortunately, one of the family members has come down with cancer. And this family member is receiving chemotherapy. So the word went out to everyone who is coming to this Thanksgiving gathering, make sure that you all get the flu shot before you come to the family gathering, because God forbid, you might have the flu and you might expose this family member who's undergoing chemotherapy for cancer, whose immune system is weakened and who is vulnerable to the dread possibility that they get the flu, and because their immune system isn't working properly, they might experience much more serious side effects, not side effects, but effects of the flu virus, develop pneumonia, and so on. So the email went out, everyone should get the flu shot. Well, it was interesting to see, you know, everybody hit reply all, and we started to get responses from all the family members. Sorry, if you're insisting that everyone get the flu shot, please count me out of this. I mean, nicely, no, nobody replied angrily, but they said very nicely that no, they routinely don't get the flu shot, that they prefer not to get the flu shot. And if that's a condition of attending this Thanksgiving gathering, I'm going to bail. So one by one, all the Thanksgiving guests have bailed. And the hostess is now left in a predicament where she's planning a big Thanksgiving for the whole family, but nobody's going to show up because of this new edict that everyone must get the flu shot. And, you know, our family is I'm considered a radical medically, because I'm a proponent of complementary alternative medicine. There are doctors, there are educated people in the family. But many of them, you know, take the view that they'd rather suffer the potential consequences of having an actual flu than the potential side effects of the flu vaccine, or perhaps not get any true benefits from the flu vaccine. Because, I mean, I wish I had a buck for everyone who's comes into me, my office, suffering from flu-like symptoms, who either just took the vaccine and thinks the vaccine may have caused their flu-like symptoms, or the vaccine didn't work to prevent the flu. That often happens because every year they try to come up with the best match in terms of targeting the upcoming flu epidemic, but there's often a mismatch because this is all based on predictive models. We don't know precisely how the virus is going to mutate, and the vaccine is prepared literally months before the vaccine arrives. So it's kind of like a weather report. You know, we're saying, oh, it's going to be sunny, and then it turns out to be cloudy. Same thing happens. Sometimes we get it right, and the vaccine is fairly effective, but for a large percentage of people, the vaccine does virtually nothing and runs the risks of side effects. Now, some of you may be saying, well, that's, you know, Dr. Hoffman, you're on the fringe of medicine. That's a rather radical view of things because public health officials unanimously agree that everyone should get the flu vaccine because it saves lives. But recently, I'll share this with you, a Johns Hopkins scientist, Dr. Peter Dashi, has issued a blistering report on influenza vaccines. It's been published in a prestigious medical journal, the British Medical Journal. Dr. Dashi charges that although the vaccines are being pushed on the public, they are less effective and cause more side effects than is alleged by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's the self-same Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that had so many problems messaging about Ebola. So, you know, it used to be public health authorities were highly respected. You know, virtually 90% of people lockstepped in agreement with pronouncements by public health officials in America. But the credibility of the Centers for Disease Control and our overall health authorities in America has plummeted because so many people have been burned by their recommendations. Their recommendations are confusing. They're wrong. So many drugs have been recommended and then rescinded, caused terrible side effects, and they've had to be taken off the market. And the promise of high-tech medicine has ultimately been disappointing. So this guy, Peter Dashi, takes aim at the CDC's policy of encouraging most people to get a yearly flu shot. He says that it's based on low-quality studies that are not even good science, that don't substantiate the claims that the vaccine offers protection. He says, quote, the vaccine may be less beneficial and less safe than has been claimed, and the threat of influenza seems to be overstated. It's often hyped because they want people to get the vaccine. And one of the problems is that there are, you know, forget this Thanksgiving party. Many health facilities are mandating that employees get the vaccine. And a lot of people don't want to get the vaccine, but they're under threat of being fired if they don't get the vaccine. It's actually kind of a civil rights issue. But ultimately, these hospitals and health facilities win out, because it sounds like it's rational. Everyone should get the flu vaccine because otherwise you might affect the patients in the hospital who are already weakened, have lowered immunity with the flu. But the CDC itself acknowledges that studies finding any perceived reduction in death rates may be due to something called the healthy user effect. It's a little bit like, okay, so women initially who took hormone replacement therapy seem to do better. But it turns out that the women who pursued hormone replacement therapy generally were more health conscious. Studies on vitamins have been criticized because they say, well, people who take vitamins are healthier. Well, maybe they're healthier because they take better care of themselves. They take vitamins, they do other things that are healthy. Same thing with people who voluntarily show up for the flu vaccine. They're very patriotic about the flu vaccine. Maybe they're more careful in other areas of self-care. So one trial of influenza vaccine in older people actually found no decrease in deaths using the flu vaccine. The vaccine often misses the mark, as I said. Additionally, they minimize the potential health hazards of the vaccine. One Australian study found that One in 110 children under the age of five had convulsions following vaccinations in 2009 for the H1N1 flu. That's a pretty high rate of convulsions. And in addition, a condition called narcolepsy was more common in recipients of the H1N1 vaccine. That's when you find yourself falling asleep involuntarily, excessive drowsiness. Additionally, many of these vaccines contain mercury. So this is a problem. A Cochrane Group study, Cochrane Group rates therapies and medications, studied hundreds of thousands of people, found that the vaccine offered zero protection for precisely the three things that it's supposed to be good for. It offered people in nursing homes some immunity against the flu, but that was only if they picked the right vaccine in the right year. It didn't reduce the risk of secondary pneumonia, hospitalization, and death for elderly people. That's precisely why the vaccine is often administered. So I guess it may be, you know, health authorities may critique me for introducing doubt about something that's considered wholesome and one of our mainstreams of public health policy. But this year, I'm going to eschew the flu vaccine and use natural things to support my immune system. You can check out an article at drhoffman.com, 17 nutraceuticals that support your immunity. I think that that's a better path. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684. That's our number. You can call us with questions on today's edition of Intelligent Medicine.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. One of our good sponsors, Clear, X-L-E-A-R. They make a great nasal spray that helps with allergies and reduces the risk of infections. They have a new product that is a xylitol-based product. Very cool. It's called Light and Sweet. It is a zero-calorie sweetener. It's not chemical. It's made with xylitol and erythritol, and it's actually really good. I've sprinkled a little bit on my berries. I like to get a daily dose of berries every day because of the beneficial purplish, bluish proanthocyanidins, which are bioflavonoid compounds that help the brain and help the heart and are so beneficial. And it sometimes the berries are a little tart for my taste, so I'm tempted to put sugar on them, and I usually don't. But light and sweet, good alternative, and it's something you can bake with, and it's got great texture and good flavor characteristics. Helps to sweeten dishes in a zero-calorie way. Check it out at Clear, X-L-E-A-R.com. All right, let's talk to Joe down in Philadelphia. Hey, Joe.
Hi, doctor. Hey, doctor, are there any nutraceuticals that would help in prostate cancer that has metastasized?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that prostate cancer is a really good case for nutritional support. And the key thing that I would do if it's metastasized, I mean, look, it's still different when you're talking about early prostate cancer that has not spread. And sometimes we do what's called watchful waiting, where the prostate is, you know, the cancer's been found, but it's not such a stage where you actually have to irradiate the prostate or do surgery. Certain things are helpful there, you know, extra vitamin D, EGCG from green tea, chiolic from aged garlic extract, Zyflamend, which is an anti-inflammatory product. All these are helpful, but the thing that I find most helpful in prostate cancer that is spread is, I mean, and we use all these natural compounds, and I think they're helpful, but you have to use a bigger gun from a natural standpoint in metastasized prostate cancer. And I've had success in dramatically slowing the progression of metastasized prostate cancer with IV vitamin C, intravenous vitamin C, but it can't be, or some people say, okay, it's intravenous, great, well, I'll just take some oral vitamin C. It won't work because you cannot achieve high enough tissue levels of the vitamin C. It must be very high dose. One of my patients is receiving over 100 grams of vitamin C when he gets his biweekly infusions. He does it a couple of times a week and is a long-term survivor of metastatic prostate cancer. You know, amazing the doctors are following him. So that I would suggest, the something you can get from a complementary practitioner. You're down in Philadelphia, and there are such. I think there's a Center for Complementary Medicine at Jefferson University Medical School or Jefferson Medical College. So that's a place where you can obtain that. And, you know, and I would use the full complement of the natural things. I would use, I would also use modified citrus pectin, which is something that slows the progression of metastases. It's a derivative of apple pectin, but it does something to prevent these errant cancer cells that are floating around your body and looking for a place to land and plant their tendrils and start to develop a blood supply. It actually helps to prevent them from spreading, and it's one of the things that you can use. But you also may want to use Impower. That's AHCC. That is a something that's used. Virtually every cancer patient in Japan gets AHCC. It's a mushroom derivative that supports immunity. Those are some of the things that are helpful. But try to see a complementary physician, because I mean, it's a tough situation. And, you know, obviously you're not calling in a radio show to get your conventional treatment for metastatic prostate cancer. You want aggressive treatment to help slow this disease. And you can really slow it down. All right? Good luck to you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. 888-302-3684 is our number. We'll take some calls in just a moment. But a peculiar thing is happening to the drug Lipitor. It's accumulating a string of lawsuits. And it's funny because on the one hand, you know, doctors are in a peculiar position, because if someone who has high cholesterol drops dead and the doctor has not prescribed a statin drug, Lipitor is one of those drugs that lowers cholesterol, that doctor may be liable in terms of a lawsuit. On the other hand, if you, it's kind of like you're between the devil and the deep blue sea here, because on the other hand, if you prescribe Lipitor, you also might be subject, well, not so much the doctor, but the drug company might be subject to a lawsuit. Pfizer is facing a string of lawsuits related to its one of its top grossing drugs, Lipitor. A growing number of women allege that the cholesterol-reducing drug caused serious side effects that the drug company knew about but failed to warn users about. The side effect in question is diabetes. Other side effects include memory loss, insomnia, bodily aches and pains. And the drug companies and the medical establishment have minimized these side effects. But now comes evidence that this is the real deal, that diabetes risk is part and parcel of the action of statins. There's a new study that looks at the rate at which diabetes is increased, especially in women, by drugs like Lipitor. And they found about a 12% increase in new-onset type 2 diabetes. And I can think of a couple of reasons. One is because of the action of the drug itself. There is something about the action of the drug. It lowers cholesterol, but it may promote insulin resistance. Now, the medical establishment and the drug makers are very quick to add that, well, yeah, that there is a slight risk. And in fact, there's a warning now on every package insert for these types of medications that they can cause diabetes. But they say that the benefits outweigh the risk, that lowering cholesterol is more important than the risk of diabetes. But hey, diabetes is actually one of the reasons why people ultimately get heart disease. So they can't be good. 12% increase. Oh, it's only a slight increase. No biggie. In addition, and this is interesting, on average, statin recipients gained about a third of a kilo. That's about slightly less than a pound more than recipients of a placebo or who got standard care. So number one, the statins do something a little bit to slow you down, slow your metabolism down, thus increasing the risk of diabetes. But in addition, I think they remove the incentive to eat better, because if you're faced with your cholesterol numbers that are high, you might make some lifestyle changes. Exercise more, eat less, change your diet, go on a low-carb regimen. But if it's all fixed up, you might just put the feed bag on because, hey, my cholesterol's good. No problem. I'm handled. So this is a real deal. There can be some problems associated with these medications. I prefer not to use them, but in some instances, it is desirable and necessary. I'm not ultimately opposed to them. I just don't simply prescribe them because somebody's cholesterol is a little high. All right, let's talk to Tom up there in Concord, New Hampshire. How you doing, Tom?
Good, doctor. How are you, sir?
Very well.
I have an embarrassing question for you. I've been recently diagnosed with or have genital warts.
Okay.
I've been to my dermatologist, and he has prescribed to me, and excuse the pronunciation, I don't know if it's right, but Condilix.
Condilix, okay, yeah, I think
okay,
that's...
Does that sound right? Yeah. Okay, so my question to you is I've put it
by
on...
By the way, I think that's a cream that's based on a chemotherapy drug, and you apply it topically to your genital region, and it sort of, in effect, burns away the genital warts.
Yeah, yeah, and that's my question to you. So I put it on for 3 days, and then you stay off of it for 4 days. So I'm in my second day of staying off of it. The burning is pretty intense. And
my
question
exactly.
is, do you know of anything that you can buy over the counter that would relieve yeah. some of that burning?
Okay, so let's talk about this. First of all, you say it's an embarrassing problem. Well, yeah, I guess it's embarrassing because it affects you where you definitely it's part of you where you don't want that to be happening. But the prevalence of HPV, what do you think the prevalence of HPV, just carrying it, not necessarily having genital warts, is in the female population? What do you think it is? Just take a wild guess.
I don't know, but I'm guessing by the question it's probably high.
It is. It's about 60-70% carriage of the virus. Now, that doesn't mean that they have visible genital warts, but they're carrying the virus. And that's one of the reasons why they're offering the HPV vaccine, on the theory that if we use the vaccine, that the women won't catch HPV and that they will have a lower risk of cervical cancer. I mean, that's another great rationale for a vaccine. But then, what about the potential side effects? What about the social implications of telling every 11-year-old girl before they're sexually active and starting to think about sex that they're going to take a drug that's going to prevent them from getting a sexually acquired disease? I mean, it's a little dicey. Okay, so men can get this too, and then men can carry it without, unbeknownst to them. But in your case, there are visible growths on the genital area, and that can be treated. Okay, so what can you do? Well, number one, you need sort of a soothing agent at this point, for the discomfort. And you might apply aloe vera, which is very soothing. It can be very helpful. Just get aloe vera gel, and apply it down there. And that may be something that helps to reduce the discomfort associated with medication. It won't make the HPV go away, but it's a sort of something that's helpful for ulcerations, which is what you can get after you use a powerful, strong medicine on the skin, right? Because the warts are breaking down, and maybe there's the skin is broken and it's uncomfortable. All right. What can you do to prevent this? Well, there's a very interesting article about the relationship between HPV infection and something that I talked about earlier in relationship to prostate cancer, which is AHCC, Advanced Hexose Correlated Compound. And that is available as a supplement under the brand name Impower, Immpower. And all my patients who have HPV, we recommend that they take the high doses of, usually two or twice daily or even six twice daily. It can be rather expensive at that level, but it's worth it for a period of 6 months to help to eradicate the HPV. It, in studies, it is very potent against the human papillomavirus. So that's something that you can do. Presumably other immune-enhancing things like vitamin D and selenium and zinc, all these can have antiviral effects. And the other thing that you may want to consider applying for any kind of skin irritation. And I actually use this stuff as an aftershave. It's very healing for skin injuries. Is Manuka skin cream? It's actually, I think it's our featured product at drhoffman.com this month. Manuka. It's made from a honey that is actually rich in plant residue that, the bees, when they fertilize flowers from the Manuka plant, their honey is rich in Manuka. It's very healing. It's very healing to skin injuries. So, you know, when you shave, it's actually you're traumatizing and ripping apart your skin. And sometimes you get a little micro nicks and sometimes actually, you know, areas of bleeding. So after shaving every morning, I apply a little Manuka therapy skin cream, especially when the weather's getting cold and dry here in the Northeast. It's very helpful in regenerating to the skin. So any, you know, skin irritations, rashes, it's very helpful. It's also antibacterial and antifungal if you have some kind of irritated skin. So those are some things you can try. And, you know, look, it's not, I mean, it sounds like a stigma, you know, a terrible stigma to have acquired this, but it's the most common thing in the world. And, you know, your condition should resolve. All right there, Tom?
Thank you, doctor. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure. You too. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684, should you care to join the conversation. This is the Weekend Edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. All right, exercise clearly is one of the best ways to get fit and to lose weight. There's a lot of controversy about the right diet for exercise. A lot of people believe that they need carbohydrate fuel to power their exercise. And this culminated in the fad in, you know, right around the time that marathons became popular, carbo-loading. You know, they'd be like spaghetti parties, you know, pasta binges right before a big race. And the idea was that you needed a lot of carbohydrates to fuel your performance. You wanted to load those glycogen storage sites on your muscles so that you could turn in a good race. So these days, the low-carb diet, in fact, the very low-carb diet, is favored for weight loss. It really does seem to work best. And there's some tension between the idea of, okay, very low carbohydrate diet to lose weight, but you need carbs to exercise, right? That's the crux of the debate. So they did a study. It's in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition, entitled, and it's a very important study for people who exercise, long-term effects of a very low carbohydrate weight loss diet on exercise capacity and tolerance in overweight and obese adults. So what they're looking at is what happens when you give a very low carbohydrate diet to folks who are exercising to lose weight. Does it affect their performance? And you might think, well, yeah, you know, maybe they don't get enough carbs and they're going to feel sluggish and lethargic and they won't be able to exercise, and that will subvert the benefits of the exercise program. So they did this study. They looked at 76 adults, and they were middle-aged. They were overweight, and they put them either on a very low-carbohydrate diet or a high-carbohydrate diet, and then they had them exercise. And here's what they found. They found that compared to the high-carbohydrate diet, the low-carbohydrate diet had greater reductions in their fat burning, improvements in their fat burning, which suggested that their metabolism was actually better and that their fat burning was enhanced. In overweight and obese patients, the low-carb diet promoted greater fat utilization. And both the low-carbohydrate diet and the high-carbohydrate diet had similar effects on aerobic capacity and muscle strength. In other words, the denial of carbohydrates caused no reduction in exercise performance. They were similar. Both groups performed equally well, suggesting that long-term consumption of a low-carbohydrate weight loss diet does not adversely affect physical function or the ability to perform exercise. So lest you think that, you know, you're an exerciser and you're overweight, but you feel, I'm gonna go out and go to the gym. I need that Gatorade, you know, to give to power. I need a power bar, you know, with a lot of calories to help fuel my exercise. No, don't go there. Just, you know, stick to your low-carb diet, and it's going to work for you. Here's another one on the exercise front. Did you know that sitting is the new smoking? Yeah, that's kind of the catchphrase for this phenomenon. It turns out that sitting for prolonged periods of time is extremely deleterious for you. And it's not even offset by exercising. So you exercise, but you go, then you sit in your office for a long period of time, 7, 8, 9 hours, and the amount of time you spend sitting puts nails in your coffin. In spite, I mean, the exercise will mitigate the effects of the sitting, but the exercise will not totally reverse the adverse effects of sitting. So what to do? Headline, just taking breaks from being sedentary may benefit older adults. This is from Reuters News Service. Older adults could greatly benefit from breaking up their sedentary time throughout the day, even if it's just shifting from sitting to a standing position. So, the other way that people sit, forget the office. People at night or retired people, they just get in a lazy boy, they lie on the couch and watch TV for hour upon hour upon hour. Just the average American sports watcher. You know, they strategically locate the snacks by the sofa and they recline. And that can be very, very harmful to your health. So what they suggest is based on a study. They track both physical activity and sedentary behavior in 215 adults between 65 and 94 using small accelerometers. By the way, accelerometers are everywhere now. It turns out my new iPhone is an accelerometer. I didn't even realize it. There's a health app there. And when I push the button, I see that I walk on average every day about 2 miles, and I climb about 7 flights of stairs. This is apart from the extra exercise that I do. You can actually monitor your steps and your mileage based on a mobile device that you carry. You don't have to have a special device to do it. So the study looked at how sedentary behavior or taking breaks in sedentary behavior were associated with physical functioning. And what they found was that, of course, moderate to vigorous physical activity was linked to better physical function. But the study also found that people who were more sedentary and took fewer breaks to get up, move around, just walk around, had a significantly lower physical function than others who were more active or who broke up their sedentary time more often. So the key is, and people in my office will attest this, I am like a caged animal in my office. I mean, I'll sit during the duration of a patient appointment, but I will get up, I will walk around, I will go up to the front, I will engage people in conversation. I'm like a restless caged tiger in my office because it's not good to sit. And so the conclusion of this is in the Journal of Gerontology of this month. Our findings highlight that even though older adults may not meet physical activity recommendations, so okay, forget, running the track, or, cycling or doing something heavy duty. If they break up sedentary time more often, they may experience benefits in aerobic capacity, skeletal muscle performance, flexibility, agility, and dynamic balance. And all these subtle factors are relevant for physical functioning and well-being in the elderly. So get up, get the blood circulating. Prevent the blood from congealing in your lower extremities. Stand up. It actually, just the act of getting up, standing up, changing positions stimulates your circulatory system and gets, it's like driving a car. Car's sitting in your garage. The gunk is going to accumulate, and you just want to blow out the exhaust from time to time with some form of physical activity, even if it's minor physical activity. So get up, fidget, take breaks, go to the water cooler, have a cup of decaf. In my office, one of my favorite, I go up to the front of the office and I look at patient charts, or I go into my dispensary, look at what vitamins I have there, just to remind myself of my armamentarium of supplements. All right, 888-302-3684 as our program continues for many of you into a second hour. And in our second hour, we'll take your phone calls. We'll also talk about, it's not often that this happens, a new nutrient, a very exciting new nutrient that I think is going to make a big difference for people with cardiovascular disease, metabolic syndrome, prediabetes, and inflammation. You can't beat that. 888-302-3684, start calling. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intel. This is, well, actually, we have another minute to go. I'm looking at the clock. I'll remind you that we have a great new sponsor, Super Beats. I'm talking about exercise. Super Beats is a convenient way in which you can ingest your beet juice. Beet juice is associated with improved circulation and improved athletic performance, and has become my favorite pre-exercise drink. We'll be talking next hour a little bit about Super Beats. You can get it by going to intelligentbeats.com, or you can call 800-738-2198. More information coming up on this, I think, breakthrough product. Now it's time to break. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. We'll be right back.